Control, compliance, confidence. That's what the American Express corporate program helps deliver. Customized rewards, centralized company spending, and count on world-class customer care. With corporate cards from American Express, your company can be covered. Explore more at americanexpress.com/corporate. Terms apply.
Hey, hey, it's Mark. I'm back with another great episode of Finding Your Summit, all about people overcoming adversity and finding their way. And before we get into today's great guest, I want to remind everybody I'm on the verge of leaving for Mount Everest, flying from LA to Nepal, where I will start the trek up the mountain. You can follow the journey at my website. I have a blog. Check it out. You can actually see me moving up and down the mountain. Now I'll be describing all the stuff that's going on as well as on my social media. You can check out all the pictures. It's going to be incredible. I can't wait. What an experience. We continue to raise money for Emilius Everest, the Lhotse Challenge. And it's just amazing what this campaign has actually done. My daughter has epilepsy. We're trying to help people also over at Higher Ground. Great organization, people with cognitive and adaptive issues, trying to bring money and awareness. So again, you can go to the philanthropy tab on my website and you can donate. Every amount counts. And finally, please go and give the show a ratings and review. There's so many downloads. I'm so appreciative of all the people that love hearing these incredible stories of these amazing people doing just, you know, rock star things to move the ball ahead in their life, like my guest today. So let's get into that. I've got the one, the only, Garrett Madison, who owns a mountaineering service guide service all over the world. Garrett, how you doing?
I'm doing awesome, Mark. Thank you.
Yeah. Hey, listen, it's great to have you. And this last year has been really challenging for everybody, right? And so today's, you know, kind of the whole theme is we're about to embark on this incredible journey. You've done it now, I think 14 times. This might be your 15th coming up, something like that. We'll get into that in just a second. But you know, it's just we've all had to endure through this whole crazy COVID-19 pandemic, and you are not alone, and you are in the service business. Essentially, describe what you do, because you can do it much better than I can, and the kind of impact that it had in terms of your business and how you had to pivot and figure it out.
So as a mountaineering guide service, I organize and lead expeditions all over the world, to the seven summits, which is the highest peak on each continent, and also the highest peaks in Asia, like Mount Everest, K2, second highest peak, Mount Lhotse, the fourth highest peak, and others. When COVID hit, we were about a week away from flying from the U.S. to Nepal to go on our Mount Everest expedition. Nepal closed their border. China closed their border. Mount Everest was completely shut down. It was a big surprise for everybody, obviously. And initially, we thought it would be just a couple of weeks of shutdown business, and then we'd be back up and running a couple months later when we start our K2 trip in June. However, COVID has endured, and much of the world remained totally closed for travel. Countries flat out closed their borders. Even if a country was open, like Tanzania for Kilimanjaro, it was hard to find anybody who felt comfortable traveling there to climb. So I had no work from March on through July. Fortunately, in late July, Mount Rainier National Park opened up and allowed commercial guiding again. So we were able to operate our Mount Rainier program, which was awesome. The climbers came out from the Midwest. We met up. We had perfect route conditions, perfect weather. It was a wonderful experience. We were totally stoked at the end of it. And we were also happy that we followed through on our plan to come out and do this. After that, I was able to get to Kilimanjaro with some more adventurous climbers. And then after that, off to Nepal for Amma Diblam, which is a beautiful peak on the way into Mount Everest.
Yeah. So I think that was back in October, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So let me stop the story there for just a minute. And the if I go back and let's just reset this and go back to when all this was going down. So roughly last March, now this would be 2020, I had actually, this is roughly around the middle of that month, I had packed all my bags and was driving from Sun Valley, Idaho, where we're broadcasting this wonderful podcast today. Drove out to LA where I was going to launch. I was going to stay there for a couple of weeks and visit my daughters and then leave. And then you and I had a conversation and I was like, Garrett, what do you think? It looks like, you know, a lot of the walls are falling down right now. I'm not sure how this is going to play. I'm like, you know, are we on? He goes, yeah. So do you remember that conversation? And then the next day because you had spoken to the minister of tourism for Nepal and he had assured you. And as this was happening, I believe of China, which is the north side, correct, that controls Tibet, they had shut their borders down. So, I mean, it was just a domino effect. Like things were by the hour, by the day, they were just moving worldwide. I mean, it was like, in fact, a spread of bad news along with the virus. And, you know, like we were all learning this on the fly.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a major bummer. Learning that Everest was canceled and we couldn't go. I mean, everybody had prepared and trained and we had everything ready to go and we had to cancel our plans last minute. So it was tough for all the climbers. Obviously, all the people involved from a logistics standpoint, our climbing Sherpa team, who was expecting to work that season, the porters, the cooks, the staff in Kathmandu that help us out, other mountain guides. So it was a tough time for a lot of us.
So let's focus on them really quickly. So the whole Sherpa community, now you've gotten to know over the amount of years you've been going there, many of the Sherpa, you've become your friends, your worker bees. They are really the support staff that help shuttle people up and down the mountain and carry various gear. Tell me about like how much they depend on this and their economy to survive, to provide for the families. I mean, what is that like for them?
It's a major loss in their income for the year. Most of them rely on Everest to make the bulk of their income. And then some of them will do other trips with me during the year, summertime in Pakistan, K2, other peaks, autumn sometimes on another 8,000 meter peak or on a 6,000 meter peak like Amma de Blom. And for them to lose out on the Everest season was a big hit.
Yeah. I mean, again, it affected everybody in different ways. You know, you got it right in the gut. And it just trickled down to all your support staff, you know, that help you make all this stuff happen worldwide. So, okay. So now let's fast forward and you were in October, you were back in Nepal. So it's the first time it had really opened up. And the great news, I think you were the first tourism, if that's adventure travel, whatever we want to call this category, that came into the country to go climb a mountain.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And I just want to give a quick shout out to our Everest climbing team who was scheduled to go with me to Nepal last spring, including yourself. Everyone was very generous and agreed to take a partial hit on their investment in the expedition and team up with myself and my company to make a partial payment to our Nepal staff, the climbing Sherpas, the cooks, the porters, the logistics guys in Kathmandu. And they just were so grateful and thankful to our climbing team for doing that. So thank you, Mark. And thanks to our climbing team for stepping up and making sure that those guys and their families were at least somewhat taken care of for the Everest season not happening. Circling back to Nepal, in the autumn season, Nepal had announced that they were going to open September 1, and they actually postponed that out to mid-October. So I was very excited to plan an expedition to go climb Amma de Blom, which is a 6,000 meter peak, about 22,500 feet in the Khumbu Valley on the way up to Mount Everest Base Camp. And I was able to team up with some very adventurous climbers who were willing to travel during the pandemic. And we flew over there. We were the first commercial team to enter Nepal since the lockdown back in March. So we had to obtain special permits and visas to arrive, and we arrived Kathmandu. It was very quiet. No other tourists there or other climbers. We had to do a 5-night quarantine, which wasn't a big deal. We had a good time. And then we flew up to the Khumbu Valley to start our trek into base camp. Khumbu Valley normally in the autumn season is bustling with trekkers, climbers, lodges are packed. You see a lot of people out on the trails. Tea houses are all open. coffee shops in Namche Bazaar open. It was dead. Fortunately, one coffee shop did open for us in Namche. Of course, our lodge is open because we had called them in advance and booked them ahead of time. But it was surreal having the Khumbu all to ourselves.
Yeah. I mean, it was a huge disappointment. And we're talking about kind of your experience and what you had to go through in the Sherpa. But for each one of these climbers, too, that made plans, like myself, after I've been training so hard, and just mentally gearing up, and it would be like you're about to play in the Super Bowl, and then, you know, like literally 3 days before you're going to go kickoff, like we just witnessed, we're talking today on February 8th, 2021, and we just watched the Super Bowl yesterday, and having the Super Bowl canceled, and like the massive disappointment after going through all that. But you know, those things happen, and you have to adjust, and that is life. You know, we all get knocked down, and it's like, what are you going to do about it? And after about 48 hours for me, I looked at it as an opportunity to get bigger, faster, stronger, more aware of the mountain. I probably have seen every single YouTube video, really trying to set my mind, like I used to watch film when I was playing football, on, you know, the scouting report type of thing, like every inch of the way. And there's nothing like actually being there, but it's just, you know, I'm asking myself, how can I get better? And I think that's the theme of the day, as we're all trying to navigate this, where people have lost all kinds of jobs. You know, we've gone through now a number of these different recovery packages from the government. It's just like, you know, this is like no time that I have ever experienced in my particular lifetime.
Right. And one line a buddy of mine said to me is, we need to look for opportunities during this pandemic. And I didn't embrace it when the lockdown happened back in March. But a few months later, when I realized things weren't going to go back to normal anytime soon, I started embracing that concept, looking for opportunities. And that's how I came up with the idea to go to Amada Blam last autumn, the climb in Nepal. And then after that, I organized a climb to the highest volcano in the world in Chile, Ojos del Salado. I'd never been there before, but Chile opened up, found some adventurous climbers that wanted to go. We jumped through all the hoops with the COVID tests and special insurance and everything, got into Chile, didn't have to quarantine, got to the mountain, had a great climb, beautiful summit day. Everybody returned home safe, healthy. And then right after Christmas, went off to Ecuador, climbed the three highest mountains in Ecuador, Cayambe, Cotopaxi, and Chimborazo, all big glaciated volcanoes up to about 20,500 feet, and had a wonderful expedition there. And then after that, went off to Kenya and climbed Mount Kenya, second highest peak in Africa, which is actually a fun technical rock climb to get to the summit, 18 pitches of rock climbing from 5.6 to 5.8, and then 14 rappels coming down, which was another new experience for me. Never been to Mount Kenya, but found an adventurous climber who wanted to go. So the theme for me has been looking for opportunities, new experiences, places that are open in the world that we can go to, that we can travel to and climb in. And Nepal, fortunately, has remained open since they let us in back in October. And as long as they stay open this spring, we're going and we're climbing Everest. I know China's not going to open in time for the Everest season. So their border is closed and will remain so for at least a few more months. And so unfortunately for the teams that normally go to the north side of Everest, they won't be able to go this spring. Some have canceled their plans. Others have shifted to the south side in Nepal that we go to. But as of now, the total count for registered climbers on Everest in Nepal is about half of what it was last time there was a season in 2019, which is great for us. It means it'll be far less crowded than it was the last time we were up there.
I love that. And, you know, I'm always trying to see the opportunity in these different things that happen, right? And so it's such a bummer that we didn't go last year, but the way it played out, I wouldn't have wanted been at 17,500 feet, which is base camp, for 2 months as we work our way up and down the mountain and have a gigantic pandemic breakout full of packed campers, you know, trying to make this thing happen, right? I mean, it would have been a complete disaster. And now, again, going forward, it's just right now as we speak today, we're still a month away from leaving or so, but roughly it's going to be half the amount of people. And one of my great fears has been seeing those lines a couple of years ago, and you experienced that. You were there, right? And I want to ask you about how you navigated that particular situation. The world saw it. The world was shocked. I was shocked. And I was just like, okay, you're you don't want to park your car there in that particular spot for that long. And people, you know, my tent mate from Antarctica, we'd both know Don Cash, didn't make it. You know, he was one of the casualties on that. And he wasn't a strong climber, great guy, probably shouldn't have been there. And just when you get in that kind of extreme situation for that long, bad things can happen. But how did you navigate your way around on that particular Everest climb? You had a very successful, all the people, I think, summited, which is great for you. But, you know, at the end of the day, there was a traffic jam.
Right. Well, let me back up a little bit and explain how that situation came about. Because a lot of people don't understand how it got so crowded on those 2 days, May 22nd and 23rd, 2019. We got the fixed lines in May 14, which is average in a season. It was a tough season, though, with high winds, big storms. A lot of camps got destroyed by high winds during the season. And then once we got the fixed lines in, there were only two good days in the weather forecast in the month of May, May 22nd and 23rd. Generally, there's at least 10 days or 2 weeks of good weather in the forecast, so teams can spread out and go for their summit attempts on different days. But because there were only 2 days forecast for good weather, most all climbers decided to go for the summit in those 2 days. So on May 22nd, which was the most crowded day, I think something like 200 climbers made it to the top, maybe more. That's when the photo is taken of the traffic jam on the summit ridge. And imagine this, if you have 200 people climbing to the summit, 100 have made it and are now on their way down, 100 are still going up, it's going to be shoulder to shoulder there on the summit ridge. It was also very crowded the next day, May 23rd, when we summited. And those are just 2 days during the whole season. And it was a very unusual scenario. Normally the mountain is not that crowded. People are spread out all over the place. And we'll pass people occasionally, but we won't be jammed up like that. When we climbed on May 23rd, we did encounter some traffic jams. Imagine this. You have a slow climber on the fixed rope who's not moving very fast, and everybody behind them gets stuck, and they can't really move. Well, because our climbers are trained and prepared and more capable, we're able to unclip from the fixed line and climb around those folks that are moving slow or stuck in place, and then get back on the lines higher up. That allowed us to maintain our schedule and get to the summit on time at 7 to 8 a.m., and then to get back down to high camp by about noon. So fortunately, it didn't really affect our team. We were able to get up there, spent about an hour on top, had great weather, beautiful day, and then made it back down to high camp on time as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's good for you. Typically, in a situation like that, like a normal year, and let's just say that you're looking at the weather forecasting systems, which I know are way better than, say, back in the In Thin Air saga back in 1996. Do all the group leaders like yourself come together and do you guys put together some kind of agenda, some schedule to make sure that you spread it out? Or is it just like every man for himself and go for it?
Well, we do a little bit of coordination between the teams and talk about when we want to plan our summit attempts. That said, there's no regulation. So anybody can choose to go on whatever day they desire. And I think a lot of climbers look to the more experienced teams and expedition leaders and guides on the mountain and say, when are you going? What day are you summiting? Because they want to go when the experienced climber's going. So that creates a bit of a conflict for people like myself. I don't want to advertise what day I'm going to the summit and then have a bunch of climbers also going on the same day. So I'm usually more vague about our plans. That said, the weather forecasts are easy to get a hold of and everyone can see when the good weather's coming, when the winds are dropping down and there's no storms and we want to go for the summit, be up there on a beautiful day. So it's a bit of a game to plan our summit attempts and then navigate around other teams that are also going for the summit, but may encounter problems such as moving slowly, running out of oxygen up there on summit day, or other issues.
So you've been doing this, what, 20 years, something like that?
Yeah, I started guiding professionally on Mount Rainier in 1999.
Yeah, so you've been doing this, you have a lot of experience, and then you were with RMI, and then you went off to Alpine Ascents and kind of cut your chops and everything. And then you went off on your own 7 years ago, right? To form
exactly.
Madison Mountaineering.
Yep.
So the bottom line here is that you have been in the presence of many, 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 many people, right? And describe what it is when somebody who is not a, like maybe a great athlete or a great climber, or they haven't done that many peaks, and you've seen something come out. I mean, like, what is that thing for you when somebody achieves that goal, right? On something that maybe they didn't think they could do, and maybe they cry at the top, or, you know, there's all kinds of different emotions. But like, what is it? Does that at that point in time, then, like, this is why I'm doing this? I mean, does it boil down, or do you have some kind of other emotion, or there's an observation? Like, what does that mean to you when you see other people realize their dreams?
Well, it's incredibly special for me to share that moment with other climbers and the experience for them of getting to the top of Mount Everest and accomplishing a bucket list goal that they may have had their entire life. I remember the first time I made it to the top of Mount Everest, it was magical. I broke down in tears. I was able to call my parents on the satellite phone and talk to them as they were sitting down for dinner back in Seattle. And for me to get to help other climbers achieve their goal and to share the experience with them is incredibly rewarding. That's why I do what I do.
Yeah. I mean, that's great. You know, I've got big goals and aspirations. You know, we're going to together going to be running up. I'm not sure if running is the right word, but climbing to the top of Everest and then come down and then go up Lhotse and try to do a 2-for-1 before we go back down. And that's going to be just incredible moments. And, you know, like all things too. And one of the reasons why I train so hard is because I know at some point in time, there's going to be adversity. It's just the way it is. It could be weather. I could be hungry. I could be dehydrated. My oxygen mask might freeze. I don't know what's going to be, but something's coming. And so knowing that I'm in good company, I think number one, knowing that I've done everything I possibly can to prepare myself, number two, and then putting all those things together with the right team of people that you have also, because, you know, I mean, there's what, 14 people on this team?
Correct.
Yeah. So it's 14 people plus your whole support team that you have filtered all the right people, and that to the best of your ability, you can count on them, that they can hold their own, you know, knock on wood, for a really positive experience. Now, something completely different that you and I have been talking about the last couple of days, there's an individual named Colin O'Brady, who was on my podcast about 100 podcasts ago, and a great guy. Anybody who doesn't know who this guy is, he's very amazing. He's accomplished all kinds of stuff. He's had many different firsts around the world in doing variety of different sports, from climbing to rowing across Drake Passage to Antarctica. It was pretty crazy. And he has recently been on K2, and there was a group of people that were trying to become the first people really to ever climb K2 in the winter. Nobody had ever done it. And maybe a month ago or so, there was a group of Nepalese that did it successfully. And then there was another wave that tried to do it. And there's been awful weather since that last month. And in the past 2 or 3 days, 5 people have died. And, you know, as we were talking about before, you know, judgment comes into a lot of this. And talk a little bit about that, like why you and I over dinner talked a little bit about this, but like why sometimes judgment is impaired, and just the where the rubber meets the road, you have to have common sense and you have to have judgment. And if you don't have judgment, you need to be with other people. Like maybe it's me to you and you're going, no, what? You're turning around. Like, tell me about, like, I'm trying to focus in on this K2 thing. Like why bad things sometimes happen.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think if we look at both, Mount Everest in, spring of 2019, May 22nd, 23rd, when, over a half dozen people lost their lives in the death zone above 26,000 feet. And we look at what just happened, what transpired on K2 in the last couple of weeks, where 5 very accomplished climbers who had a lot of experience on other big mountains perished. It's incredibly tragic for them, for their families, their friends, for everyone. And why does that happen? When we're up in the death zone, and we become impaired if we're climbing without oxygen or we're low on resources, we don't have good support, it can become much more difficult to make good decisions. And for climbers that are going after Everest, K2, or another big mountain peak, it's a lot of sacrifice to just get to the mountain. You have to train for months and years. You have to take time away from your family, your job, your home life. You have to pay a lot of money to acquire the permits and the oxygen and food and gear and other support. And when you're up there and the summit is just a day away or less, it can be hard, I think, to think clearly, because this goal that you've worked incredibly hard for and sacrificed so much for is within arm's reach, but sometimes it'll kill you. And that's what we've seen happen on Everest year after year when climbers are in the death zone and they should be turning around because they're running low on oxygen or they're exhausted or there's bad weather coming in, but they choose to go for it. And unfortunately, I think that's what we just saw transpire on K2. Where climbers were going for the summit and the weather was bad and getting worse. But they had put so much into it that their goal was very, very close and hard to pass up. Now that's speculation. We don't know what happened for sure, but it's very sad, very tragic and unfortunate that those men lost their lives up there.
Well, yeah. And the other thing that you said is a game changer is actually wearing a mask, having oxygen, right? So you and I will be going up there with 4 or 5 tanks. And so we've got a, you know, ample supply of oxygen. And it can be the difference of you feeling energized, your system, your internal organs, everything feeling much warmer, your brain functioning. And like we were talking about before, I've actually seen this a couple times now where people have literally looked absolutely punch drunk, you know, just because they were too high and they weren't sucking O's and they just got wonky and they had to get down or bad things were going to happen to them.
Yeah. People ask me all the time if I've ever climbed Everest without supplemental oxygen. And my answer is no. I don't have any desire to at the moment. And as a mountain guide, expedition leader, and risk manager, I feel compelled to use oxygen when I'm climbing with my team to do the best job I can in looking out for everybody. I need every resource at my disposal, whether that's oxygen, staying hydrated, eating enough food on summit day, wearing the right clothing and gear and equipment, which is my Mountain Hardwear Absolute Zero Down suit. Oh. It's important for me to remain capable and for our entire team to remain capable. Once someone loses a mitten, their hands get cold and freeze, they become a major liability to the team. So for me, climbing with oxygen above 8,000 meters is imperative. And I'm very big on oxygen. I think more is better for us. And I've seen how using more oxygen at higher flow rates for our team not only greatly increases the success for everyone and also the safety, it also increases the enjoyment of the experience.
Yeah.
It's amazing. When we turn on the oxygen at about 22,000 feet on our summit rotation on Mount Everest, I personally go from feeling like I'm struggling and having a hard day in the cold to having a great day. It changes everything. You warm up, you feel stronger, you have a better appetite, and mentally we become much better decision makers because our brain is getting more oxygen to make good decisions and to think positive.
What you just said, one of the things that's really key is self-management, course management, whatever you want to talk about. So there's the kind of the three tiers to me when you're climbing. Number one is just your physical shape, right? Number two is the hydration, because as you're going up, you're burning tons of calories, but your appetite is being suppressed. And number three is the gear that you're wearing, right? If you're not wearing the right stuff and you freeze and, you know, bad things can happen. I just learned that you've got this new deal with Mountain Hardwear where you're developing your own line, which is really cool. And so I want to ask you about that. Like, why did they come to you and what value are you bringing to the table that this outdoor company, by the way, Mountain Hardwear, for anybody that doesn't know, go check them out. They're great. If you think of North Face, think of Mountain Hardwear, not as much in the casual wear like a North Face would do, like daily stuff you walk around on the street, But it's more like hardcore. You're in the mountains and this type of stuff that you need for either winter or if you're in the summer, hiking, you know, on any mountain, hill, anywhere around the world. But tell me about how you got involved with them.
Sure. So I've been on the Mountain Hardware Athlete Ambassador team since 2016. And it's a company that I've always admired ever since they started up in the mid-90s. When I was guiding on Rainier in 99, we were all using Mountain Hardware Trango tents and continue to this day. Mountain Hardware approached me about a collaboration with their high altitude and cold weather line of equipment. So that's the Down Summit suit, the one-piece suit, the minus 40 sleeping bag, the Down mittens, and the Trango tent, which is the four-season tent that can go anywhere. And these items all existed in their product line for many years, but it was time to do a refresh and to come out with some of the latest and greatest materials that are available today. Lighter, more robust, stronger, and some design enhancements, which make this lineup the best high-altitude mountaineering line of clothing and equipment that's out today anywhere. So I'm really proud and happy that Mountain Hardware wanted to work with me on this line, and I'm really excited that I get to wear this down suit and the other items in the lineup along with some of my climbing team this spring on Mount Everest.
Great. So this line, you're actually going to have your name pasted on the different outfits and the sleeping bags and stuff like that?
So the lineup is the Garrett Madison collection, and there is a label that mentions who I am and a little bit about what I do on the tents and sleeping bags, down suit, 8,000 meter parka, et cetera.
Well, certainly hoping that you can give some kind of a Zoolander pose, you know, on the sleeping bag. And just to brag a little bit about you, and then probably the reason why they picked you over me to you know, start a collection is you have stood on the top of Mount Everest successfully 10 times out of the 14. You have and are the only American to stand on K2, the second highest mountain in the world, twice. And I'm sure you've been around the world climbing seven summits. How many times?
Oh, I can't even recall, but it's really my pleasure to have climbed with so many amazing people over the last 20 plus years in my life on so many mountains all over the world. And I just feel incredibly fortunate that I've, as an American mountain guide, led more climbers to the top of Everest and K2 than anyone and never lost anybody, a client on my team. We did lose some of our climbing Sherpas in 2014. And the ice fall tragedy on Mount Everest, but very fortunate that I've never lost a climber on one of my teams.
Do you have a mountain that you like really look forward to? Because when you start spinning around the globe, as you do, right, and some mountains like Everest are 2 months, like K2, there's other ones like Mount Rainier are really a three-day journey. Is there a particular mountain that you get more revved up than, and maybe another one, not that they don't all count? It just, is there one out there that kind of gets you fired up?
Well, I have to say there's two peaks that are my favorite. Mount Everest is one because it's just magical and there's no place like the top of the world. And getting to go back and climb and work with our Sherpa team, they're such special people, and I've developed these relationships with them over years and years. It's just a wonderful experience for me that I look forward to every year. And Mount Vincent in Antarctica is also my favorite because going to Antarctica is like going to another planet. It's so magical down there. All we see when we look out on the horizon is white, the polar plateau of ice, and then the blue sky and the black rocks on the mountain. That's it. Not many people get to go down there, so it's a really special place to visit. And there's something about being totally disconnected from all of our digital devices. Yeah. It's a digital detox when we go to Antarctica, hitting the reset button.
Yeah, no, I think that's where you and I met down in Antarctica, and I was going up and you were going down, and there was kind of a funny exchange there, but We later had a meal or two in Union Glacier at the kind of big mess hall where they were making the most amazing food, by the way, ever. But you know, if I were ever to go back there, I really like that mountain, by the way. But if I were ever to go back there, I kind of have a hankering to cross country ski up to the South Pole. I think that'd be kind of a fun thing to do.
Yeah, I was lucky enough to ski the last degree to the South Pole in 2017, and it was awesome. You're just out there on the polar plateau. All you see in every direction is the white horizon.
Yeah.
And then the last day we see the U.S. South Pole station pop into view and get there and get to meet the scientists, tour the station. It's really cool.
Yeah. And those guys are there for a year.
Some of them are there for a year. They're very interesting people.
Yeah. I would for sure would break. If I put me out there for more than a month, I think I'd break.
Yeah. Yeah. No, Antarctica is a very special place. Highly recommend it. If anyone out there has the opportunity to visit Antarctica, do it.
Yeah. And you know, the other thing that's cool about it too is, I mean, we're talking about doing these adventure travel, climb Mount Vinson, which is the highest mountain in Antarctica, or cross country ski, but you can also be in a very organized, not as strenuous, adventure, fly out there and still go to the coast and see all the penguins, huge colonies of those penguins, you know, floating around everywhere.
Yeah. There's multiple activities to do. If you're not a serious climber or skier, you can still go down there and check out the penguin colony, go tour around some of the peaks close by Union Glacier Camp. Lots of things to do down there, even for a non-climber.
Yeah. Okay. Well, listen, we are days away from launching. Next time I see you, most likely, again, we've been hanging out and training a little bit here in Sun Valley, Idaho. That's been great. I think we're going to land in Kathmandu, and I'm told that we may have to quarantine, which isn't a big deal, for, you know, 4 or 5 days, right? Staying around the hotel, take COVID test, make sure everybody's safe, and then off we go. I mean, is that pretty much the plan?
That's the plan. Yep. 5 nights in Kathmandu and then fly up to the Khumbu Valley and start trekking to base camp.
Yeah. I mean, it's special for me. I mean, this is your 14th time or 15th time, right? And for me, this is number one. I've never been to Nepal, and to experience all the beauty and the range of mountains in the Himalaya, the Sherpa people, and just everything I've been working towards, you know, for really my entire life, growing up in the Northwest, admiring Lou Whitaker, Jim Whitaker, having the great fortune to climb with Ed Visters. I mean, all these people are my heroes, you know, and to have all this dream realized now, it's just, you know, it's amazing. So I'm very blessed. I'm jacked to be climbing with you and taking your knowledge base up the mountain to keep us all safe and return back to where we're from in the right way. And, you know, it's just going to be a magical, magical, magical thing to actually experience.
Absolutely. I'm really looking forward to it. We're going to have a great time over there.
All right. Listen, I want to give you a quick plug too on where people can find you, Madison Mountaineering. I believe there's a link you can go and you can reach out, right? There's a contact form. And right. So,
yep. Contact form on the website, madisonmountaineering.com. And then I'm also on social media, Madison Mountaineering or Garrett Madison One.
Okay. There he is. Garrett Madison One. There he goes. The one, the only Garrett Madison. Thank you so much. All right, buddy. Bye bye. Cool.
Hey, and thank you so much for listening to the Find Your Summit podcast. We are so glad to have you along for this journey. And if you enjoy the show, please tell a friend, share it on iTunes, spread it to the planet. We're looking to broadcast this to every person that is out there because, as you know, everybody has their own summit that they're going after. Okay, if you're looking to follow my journey, you can find that through my social links on markpattisonnfl.com. That's Mark, M-A-R-K, Pattison, P-A-T-T-I-S-O-N, NFL.com. So, until the next podcast, just remember, clear eyes, full hearts, and remember, it takes a little more to make a champion, so make it happen. Thank you. Bye.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.
You've finally broken loose from work. Three friends, one tea time, and then the text. Honey, there's water in the basement. Not exactly how you pictured your Saturday. That's when you call us, Cincinnati Insurance. We always answer the call, because real protection means showing up, even when things are in the rough. Cincinnati Insurance. Let us make your bad day better. Find an agent at cinfin.com.